Bet on Bears fans, another week is upon us. The Chicago Bears podcast is here. Unfortunately, we are here after an L. Bears take the 20-17 loss. So many almost in this game. You almost had it, but almost is only good in horseshoes and hand grenades, and we have neither of those here. As always, on a Monday, Lance Briggs joining us. Got to touch on Lance's grades last night. Interesting. A lot of smoke around him, Lance. A lot of people, there's always that one guy that's just like, Lance Briggs doesn't know football, and that's always my favorite guy because he's always the biggest guy in the chat. He's always the guy that's clearly, like, never left – the couch.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the comments to the grades, you know, are highly emotionally based, you know. And you know, throughout the season, you know, people will say, well, how could you give coaching this grade? Or how could you give this grade? You know, and I'm like, listen, the doggone defense played their tail off, you know, or like the offense played their tail off, you know, and if you're getting a high, if one of those grades are getting a high grade, it's not going to be a failing grade for the coaching, you know.
Let me ask you this. Where does coaching stop for you? Is it OCDC head coach or is this the coaching staff in totality? Because as a player, I would think you're thinking all the way down to like the guys that are working individuals and stuff like that because you're seeing development.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I coach or I grade in the totality of what's out there, you know. And honestly, the coaching grade might have been a little generous this week, you know, but you know, it really was based, you know, or at least that C was really based on how freaking dominant the defense did play all game except for that one drive.
Yeah. Hey, that one drive, man. Hey, and listen, that's to me why coaching might be a little high. We'll talk about that. Coaching gets a C. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star view. Y'all know what to do. This episode is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana. Enjoy free live music Friday and Saturday night at Hard Rock Cafe stage. That one drive to me is predicated on one play call that I guess to give Flew some credit, right? He did say I made the wrong call there because Justin Jones drops back in coverage on David Njoku. And even Justin Jones after the game was like, I didn't know what I was doing out there. Like I dropped back and I did my best, but it's David Njoku. Yeah, I mean, big boy out there. Flew said after the game he could have made a better call on that play. And I feel like that's the one that, of course, it ends up putting the game away with the game-sealing field goal.
But that doesn't put the game away. That doesn't put the game away. That was an extension to their drive.
Right.
Okay. The touchdown was that was to Amari Cooper on a broken play. A broken play. They didn't make the tackle. They didn't get him down. Okay. Now they extended. That wasn't the only play. They had another play to Njoku there in that drive. You know, and look. Maybe it wasn't the best call, but it was still a call, you know, it was still a call and they got him down, you know, and they got him down, you know, in certain situations, you know, you can get that, or you get a zone dog and you have your weak side backer who's carrying the Y across the field.
Yeah.
You know, bad call or not bad call. That wasn't the determiner of the game. Okay. Right. They still had opportunities to force them to kick that ball. To kick or get 3 points out of it, or take the ball away during that drive.
You look at the touchdown play was big. I mean, Kyler Gordon. This is one thing, boy. They throwing their body around. That defense is looking to hit people and send a message. Kyler Gordon tries to lay the hit, misses completely.
Yeah,
hoops wide open down the sideline. Broken play, like you said. Yeah. Here's the question that I do have for you, though. As we get into the coaching aspect of it. Where are you at on Flus the head coach versus Flus the DC? And the reason I ask that is this, because as a head coach, Matt Eberflus keeps stacking up these stats that I think if he wasn't the DC this year and the defense didn't develop the way that it has, we would be talking about him out of the door weeks ago. But because of what we saw versus Detroit – how we saw this defense play versus Cleveland, how this defense is coming around. He might be staying the push off. But another stat coming out last night is no head coach in NFL history has ever lost multiple games in a single year despite owning a 10-point lead and a 2+ turnover margin heading into the first quarter. Matt Eberflus just became that guy. He has now done it twice, once versus Detroit, once here against Cleveland. And I feel like this is just adding to the list of first-time things as a head coach that Flus has done to the Bears' detriment.
Okay. okay, there's a lot there. Your last statement was, it's what he's done to help to the Bears' detriment. I don't see it that way. Okay. Perspective is everything, okay? So if you're a team that is building and you are the first in history to have 10-point lead and to lose these games with a two plus turnover margin heading into the fourth.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the things. I mean, that to me tells me we're gaining. That to me tells me we're progressing because
love you.
You do those. Absolutely,
God, because next
year,
I really do.
Absolutely, because you do those same things again next year, and it will play to the strength of exactly what that says. If it says if you have a 10-point lead, or if you have a 2+ turnover ratio, you're winning 2+ turnover ratio.
Yeah.
Those L's, the historic stuff goes to being the regular stat that it's supposed to be.
Right.
So all those games. So if you say there was four games where that was in play. That's four wins next year. That's the way I see it.
Right.
You know, it's not about is you know, and this whole deal about, you know, him, the head coach versus the DC. Look, he is our head coach. He is our head coach. You know what I mean? So if you remove him as the head coach, you're removing him as the DC. He's not gonna take a DC job.
Well, no, I think for me, right, like we know what kind of head coach he wanted to be. It just didn't work out here. Right. Everything that happened this season with Allen Williams. Yeah. Now I've got to take over. I'm going to step in. I'm going to handle this role because we're in a bind. Somebody's got to do it. If he wants to go back to being that CEO type of head coach, is the value still there for him as the DC? Now, I know we've talked about, you know, he can always take it back over. But that to me is, are you bringing somebody else in that could possibly take this defense in the wrong direction? Are you bringing somebody else in that's not going to call the defense the way that Flus would call it? And is Flus going to step in? I think the biggest thing for me is he going to step in and say, you're doing it wrong, right? Because I think that there are times where I look at Luke Getsy and I would love to see Flus say, right, the players said yesterday, Darnell Mooney, DJ Moore, in the third quarter, we're not being aggressive enough. We need to be more aggressive. If your head coach isn't realizing
that, which person said that?
Mooney and DJ Moore both came out yesterday and basically said in that third quarter they felt like it got a little bit complacent, right? They were up 17-7 with
when
how
were they
the
not
defense
complacent?
Was playing.
When were they not complacent? When were they not complacent in the game? Like how can they judge the third quarter as being complacent compared to the rest of the game? The offense was complacent the entire game.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put it,
you're saying the whole game was a complacent offense.
They were complacent the whole game. All right. They didn't block well. All right. They didn't convert on third down. They were terrible on third down. Okay. You know what I mean? There were wrong routes that were ran, especially by Mooney on a third down to convert. All right. So let's not get into complacency. We want to get into complacency in the third quarter. No, it was there beforehand. Yeah, right. The only thing that wasn't complacent was the defense, doggone it.
My favorite part about this is the second I said Darnell Mooney, the first thing Lance thought was the dude to drop the ball.
That wasn't the first drop. That wasn't the first drop of the game. You know, or an errant route, or a route that was run that the quarterback, we went on the same page with the quarterback.
No, 100%. The offense to me was not on point for most of the day. I guess maybe they feel like they got another lead, and offensively they were like, okay, the defense got us the rest of this game. To me, again, that's a moment where I would like to look at my head coach and say, we going to dial something up? Are we going to look at something? Are we right? I feel like we've had so many moments where we've been waiting for Flus to go to Getsy and say, fix it.
I don't. But see, here's the thing. I I wasn't in total disagreement with Getsy's calls. Like, the only thing that I probably didn't like is that they didn't commit to running the ball. Neither did Cleveland. You know, it was the execution that had more problem, that I had more issues with.
Yeah.
You know, than the calls. You know, they're like if you can't block up front, if you're not consistently blocking up front, we're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, we knew that and a lot of those times they kept the tight end in. They did the best they could to try to help the protection. You know, with Myles Garrett, you know, and Zaharias over there, man, there's gonna be problems. But still the execution wasn't there. You know, there were drop balls, especially in that opening, like Tonyan. There was that ball, you couldn't have laid up any more perfect than it was laid up there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's all I'm saying. You know, I'm not gonna go more in depth on all of this stuff.
So you're on board with how the game was called. The players got to execute it better at the end of it.
I think the execution was poor.
Yeah,
I think that was poor. You know, and we're looking at a situation where, you know, everybody is on Getsy's head, you know, on a weekly basis. So now you don't execute, you know, the finger is going to be pointed right back where everybody wanted that finger to be, you know. But now if they're executing and the game plan's not working, like it's a bunch of bubble screens all day long, you know, then that's different. But the calls and the situations with the tight end coming in and helping to chip and create more time, you know, that stuff, I get all that stuff.
Yeah. No, and I do think that there was, listen, offensively, when you look at how the offensive line blocked, it's amazing to say that we had a 10-point lead going into that fourth quarter. I thought and everybody wants to focus in on Braxton Jones. No, let's look over to the dude that's making $10 million a year. Nate Davis got destroyed all day. Nate Davis was going backwards all day. And when you have that, it forces you into a situation where Justin Fields has to make some kind of magical play for the play to work out for you. You had two passes that, to me, should have been touchdown passes at the end of the day. I'm not even talking about your miracle pass that he throws up at the end of the game. I just felt like you said, right? And I think your offensive grade spoke to that, right? A D-minus for the offense was perfect because everybody was at fault in that game. There were moments where I thought Justin Fields missed on some third down plays that they were open, going for first down to keep the line moving. Darnell Mooney, my God.
They couldn't get a third and short.
The problem for me is the fourth and one, right? And I get it, right? Listen, the part that Bears fans don't think about today is that's the number one defense in the NFL. They get paid to play just as
well. They're very good.
And they're really, really good, right? But that fourth and one play where I thought you could keep the drive going, Darnell Mooney, just a little shoulder, a little anything. Like
if you give just a little bit more,
yeah,
it secures the first down. If you just put your body in front of him and keep your body in front of him, it secures the first down. So, probably more
with Justin Fields, right?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt in my mind. You know what I mean? And so, you know, when I hear the lackadaisical third quarter stuff,
you know,
if you just do your doggone job, you know, you extended drives. Who knows what happens on those extended drives?
Yeah.
So, you know, some of that stuff is just tough to hear.
But I think it also goes to a little bit. I think there is some right that you do have to put on Getsy, right? To me, there's never an answer for fourth and – or what was it? Yeah, it was another fourth and one, right? We ran two of them that day. Fourth and one and around to the skinniest dude on the field.
Just sweet. He loves that play. Hey,
listen, we got a 6'4", 230-pound QB and a 6-foot, 235-pound running back. We don't use either of them on that play.
Look, you know, if I were the OC, you guys would be talking about, man, this guy Lance, he really loves to put two fullbacks in and just drive forward and wedge block it. You know, it's almost like the tush push. He just really loves this play.
He loves it.
Because we're trying, because we got to get a yard.
Yeah.
We got to get a yard.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming downhill. Stop us. We're going to double team everybody and just push.
You had talked about before, right? Like how coaches have to kind of toe that line of, if you're not right, like if we blitz too much, defensive linemen are going to be like, hey, why y'all blitzing so much? On the offensive side, does it seem like he's just kind of given up on his running back room? And I talked about this with J-Mac yesterday, where he's trying to do this running back by committee, and it feels like you don't allow a running back to get a lather up. When we've seen Deontay Foreman be his best, he was the number one. Roschon Johnson was the backup. When we saw Khalil Herbert be his best, he was the number one. Roschon Johnson was the backup. Khalil Herbert's getting 14, 15 carries in a game. Deontay Foreman was getting 14. Now they're all like getting five. Here's five. Here's five for you. Five for you. Figure it out.
This is probably one of the most head-scratching, confusing parts of our game right now, you know, because over the last, you know, 2 months or so, you know, Deontay Foreman has been a guy that we can count on. You know, this guy gets hurt. This man may get hurt. Or we don't have this guy. Deontay Foreman has been a bell cow for us. And I just, right now, you don't see it. You can't get any rhythm for a running back because this other guy, it's his rotational time, you know. And then when you know, how do you get a rhythm as a running back and get a feel for how we're blocking, how this defense is running, you know, so I know what holes to hit and how to move this way and that way. If I'm only getting, you know, three reps and then maybe one carry.
Yeah.
It's a tough game, man. It's a tough game. But you know what? And I heard Marshall Faulk say this. He said, you know, the decline in the running back is because of the running back. He's like, there's too many running backs in today's game that are willing to take themselves out instead of fight to stay in. He was like, you know, the bell cows never wanted to come off the field. And he's absolutely right. Like, you know, I mean, you know, and even when I remember being out there with Matt Forte, you know, Forte did not want to come off the field, have a big run, whatever it is, you know, and the coach tried to send somebody in for a play. They might get them in for a play, but Forte wanted to be in.
Yeah.
Like, we're a better team when I'm in here and I'm playing, you know, and the trend really has come. Like, I see a running back have a nice little run, and he's like, he starts tapping, like, hey, I need a couple plays.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, why don't you want to stay in, you know what I mean, until you're absolutely gassed and your coach is like, you got to come out for a play. All right, coach, I'll come out for a play, but I'm back in after this.
And to that point, right, like, here's Just so people don't think it's just like, oh, well, this is what the modern NFL is. Doesn't change who the player is, right? Here's the numbers. Khalil Herbert, 18 carries, 103 yards, 10 carries, 76 yards. He hasn't had double-digit carries the rest of the season, and he hasn't had over 50 yards since then. Look at Deontay Foreman. Remember, he didn't play the first 4 weeks of the season. When he comes back, 15 carries, 65 yards, 16 carries, 89 yards. Got 9 carries a week after that versus the Chargers. We got our butts kicked, but 34 yards, didn't do much there. 20 carries versus the Saints, 83 yards. 21 carries versus the Panthers, 80 yards. This is in addition to what Justin Fields and Tyson Bagent were able to do, right? Then you can get fall off. 6 carries, 14 yards. This is when Khalil Herbert comes back. 11 carries versus the Lions. He ran for 50 yards. He gets 6 carries today or yesterday, -6. When you give him the ball consistently, and I guarantee you that's any running back in the NFL. The guys that are the great ones, the guys that put up big numbers every year, they're getting 12 to 15 to 18 carries a game.
Yep.
You it would be mind-blowing for you to not give Christian McCaffrey 10 plus carries a game. It would be career suicide.
No.
And this decommitment to the run to me is very, very, I would say that's probably the most concerning part that I've seen offensively, even outside of everything that we may say with Justin Fields and up and down play, whatever that is.
It is. Yeah. It was raining.
It was the game to do it.
It's raining. You're like, come on. You know, and this was asked. Someone asked me this question before the game. You know, is it rainy? Is it going to change the conditions? You know what I mean? Does it mean it's going to be more of a run game? And I'm like, you know, in 2023, you know, I said, this is the NFL. I was like, this is going to be the best care you're going to get for a weathered football, whatever it is. But they don't care. They're going to throw the ball if they want to. It's whether rain, sleet, snow, mud, they're going to throw the ball because that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Offensively, listen, you talk about throwing it. Justin Fields let it rip, 19 for 40, under 50% completion. I thought that there were plays that could have been big for us, but I still do believe that. And here's the thing that for some reason in 2023, I don't know if you noticed this, Lance, but two things can't be true at once. It's either one or the other. And if you believe two things can be true, we have to fight about it, basically. There were big plays that Justin Fields put the Bears in position to make, and they didn't make them. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields played poorly as well yesterday. There were times where I thought that he
played poorly collectively.
Locked into the pocket.
They played poorly collectively. There's a play in particular where I argued with Alex about. He's like, why can't he escape on this play? And I said, the way that this pocket was building, that this pocket's building, I said,
is that the third and 14 one?
It was like a wave to his right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the way that pocket was building, and then you had Myles Garrett on the left edge. Like the way that pocket was building, I was like, by the time he set up, the wave was coming. I'm like, you can't escape that. I'm like, you can't escape that. I was like, he had enough time to get back and set his feet. I was like, if the receiver's not open right now, you know, and you're leaving guys in to chip and block, so you have less receivers out there. If he's not open right now, or you're not throwing it up to lead him, you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
We're in trouble. Because the natural thing is to say, okay, now I probably need to run. It's like, but
that's Myles Garrett.
Really, you understand right now, like, there's not a chance to run. Like, if there's a half a second and there's something else that I might be able to throw, then throw, yeah. There was another one where he looked like he was gonna take off, and then he stopped because I'm pretty sure he thought the two D tackles were gonna close in on him, you know, and then he ended up getting engulfed. You know, listen, I don't play quarterback, and I that wasn't the position that I wanted to play. You know,
it worked out for you. Don't worry.
Absolutely. You know, and I do think that had he not hesitated, he probably would have had a shot to beat those guys out. But I'm not in that pocket.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not in that pocket. You know, and you try to do the best you can off the spur of a moment.
Yeah, and I just offensively it wasn't enough, right? And again, Cleveland's defense is kind of good, right? Missing as many pieces as they're missing, they're still the best defense in the NFL, and to me, by a lot. And that opens up things for Joe Flacco by the end of the game. And I think this is what a lot of fans are going to look at, right? Like Joe Flacco still had a game where he put you in a position to win, even with all of the pressure that the defense brought. Even with him throwing three interceptions, that's where you look at the did that game. Let me ask you this: did that game feel at all familiar to any games that you've played in as a Chicago Bear? No, where you were just, you know, you're trying to get a sip of Gatorade in, and you had to
far too many. All right, far too many. But the other thing, you know, is the muff punts. You know, you get into these games and you play defensively, you know, and I'll tell you, defensively, you play so doggone well, and you hate that the game gets put in situations where, man, this doggone muff punt is screwing up, you know, the effects of this game or the direction of this game. And in a game, the way that game played out, that play was huge. And special teams plays usually are, but that play was huge, you know, in changing the momentum of that game.
That's a position where you don't get the "I had a bad day" excuse, right? Like, you having a bad day means we got put in a bad position and it could cost us the game. In this case, it kind of feels like it definitely plays into costing you the game, right? But like those, that being the punt returner, the kick returner, those are positions that, and this is why people have been so hard on Velus Jones. This is why Trent Taylor was brought here, right? You have to be perfect. If you are not perfect, the football goes the other direction off of that. Even in those conditions yesterday, I felt like there were a couple of those plays where he was trying to field it. And I was just like, bro, like, maybe you need to get out the way of that one, let that one bounce. Like, it is raining. Like, I don't know what to do, bro. Like,
he was nervous, huh? You were nervous?
Well, nervous, huh? I'm nervous, one, for Velus anytime he's back there. But two, I was nervous because that was the perfect conditions for something like that to happen, right? It's raining, it's cold in Houston, in Cleveland.
It's windy.
That ball can turn instantly when you think it's here. Now it's not. And I think that's kind of what ends up happening to Trent on the muff. And he's been very sure-handed. But you can specifically look at those plays and say, yeah, like, one, it started us very deep in our own end zone. He recovers the muff. But on the second one, Cleveland gets that ball back, and we're just like, as a defense, what does that do to you, right? You just got the big stop. You got to go back out there. What does that do mentally to you?
Oh, he just says you got to go out and do it again. So you got to go out and do it again.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love Lance. Like ain't, it's nothing, baby. What do? I get paid to play defense. I'm back out.
Like, I got – listen, man, you know, I can't – you can't shine if you're on the sideline. You can't shine if you're on the sideline. So, you know, what I mean, especially if I, you know, if I made a big play, shit, hell, I got to have a short mirror. I got to go out there and do it again.
Yeah.
How many times if the defense has to go out there, if their offense goes out there 16 times and they score, you know, or offense go out, you know what I mean? Then I got to go out 17 times and make stops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's just what it is. Yeah. That's what it is, man. And you know, you can't break the spirit of a playmaker, you know what I mean? And if you guys are playmakers, and that's what you got, and your number's called, go out there and do it.
Hey, and you got some playmakers on this defense, Lance. Right. I mean, listen, I feel like we say this every week. Montez Sweat, my God,
man,
absolute monster. You knew he was going to have a day when they were like, we're missing like pretty much our entire offensive line, and then they ended up losing why can't I think of his name? But
DeJuan. Is it DeJuan Jones?
No. During the game, they lost their right guard.
Oh, yeah. I heard you. Yeah.
Bettini, I think. Andrew Bettini, something like that.
Yeah, Martini. Something Martini, yeah.
Martini, hey. Uh-huh. After that.
Ain't nothing teeny about him.
Hey, Montez Sweat was yo. That was crazy.
His name is
that was crazy. That was crazy.
It was a play on words. All right.
That was crazy. That was great. You have to be stopped. No, but I mean, listen, the second you saw that, right, you just knew Montez was going to feast all day. And what are you seeing on the field that has him getting to the quarterback so consistently, no matter what? Because it doesn't feel like he's having the, right, like Khalil Mack is one of the best to ever do it. But they would basically just be like, send as many people as we can at him. We'll deal with the rest of the defensive line as we deal with him. What are you seeing that the rest of the D-line is doing that's allowing Sweat to still have this level of impact?
Well, one of the things, you know, I saw from Jervon Dexter is, you know, his vertical push was good. He was very stout in any of their games. He got vertical. He had his movement, and he got vertical, which allowed Sweat, you know what I mean, to cross over, you know what I mean, to cross over. And you're dealing with Cleveland Browns offensive line that, you know what I mean, is decimated by injuries. Yeah. You know, so running these games is one of the things that you probably won't expect. Or, hey, we're going to run games against this offensive line. but when he gets his one-on-ones, which is more special than anything else, when Montez Sweat gets his one-on-ones, he is dangerous. He's lethal, you know, and that's really, you know, I mean, that's what you're looking for, is who can win their one-on-ones, and he does it on a consistent basis, which did make sure that football comes out early or on time, which allows our defensive backs to be opportunistic. And if you've been seeing over the last three, four weeks, they've been taking the ball away
on a
high volume. In high volume, we've been taking the ball away. So that's been his effect. You know, the other guy, too, playing that weak side linebacker position is T.J. Edwards.
Hey,
listen,
hey.
He's on another level right now. And his stats, some of his stats aren't showing up. Some of the stats aren't showing up, what he's doing, what he's causing. But he's disruptive in the backfield. He's disruptive sideline to sideline. He's causing interceptions for other guys. And that's, you know what I mean? In my opinion, that's how you play that weak side linebacker position at its best.
That hit that he laid that just popped the ball straight up. Just like, my God, hallelujah. Like that, bro, that felt like the shot heard around the world. And what I mean by that is that felt like the thing that's going to become a hallmark of this defense. That's going to be remember that play? Yeah, that was the spark of all of this, because you just saw right there, it was the first time where, to me, TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds this season were finally in perfect sync, right? It's always seemed like there's been a little bit of something. You know, one of them plays well, the other one, right, playing okay, or what, vice versa, right? That was Tremaine Edmonds was in the perfect spot. TJ Edwards was in the perfect spot. TJ Edwards lays the boom. Tremaine Edmonds catches it. Dare I say, for a second there, it looked like Briggs and Urlacher. I'm not going to go that far. It was a flash. It was 0.02 seconds. But it looked like they were in that perfect sync on the play. And that's the one that, of course, it ends up being a huge play for this defense and for the team as a whole.
Well, if that's the case, and this is their first year playing together, then the future's bright.
Future's bright. We're going to see what this defense is able to put together. Outside of that, what'd you see defensively? I saw you and AB going at it a little bit on who should be getting more praise, D-line or linebacker. Who'd y'all end up settling on? Y'all still at a stalemate on that right now?
That'll never be settled. Okay? It'll never be settled. What we will agree on is that it starts up front. Certainly starts up front. It's rush and cover, okay? But the way that our linebackers have been playing, see, he's got sweat now. You know what I mean? And sweats it's kind of turned the tide for him a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Because the guy is now leading two different teams in stats right now. But I'll tell you what, listen, I've got three dogs at linebacker, and all of them gotta eat. And all of them eat every game when given the opportunity. And right now they're playing at their best, and it's fun to watch.
And I think I will say this, right? That is the one thing that gets me excited about where this linebacker core is heading, right? Is because in our mind, right, I think in most Bears fans' minds, we always say Urlacher and Briggs were the catalyst of our defense, our leaders, right? Had the dogs up front as well, but it was always Urlacher and Briggs and Urlacher. It wasn't that third name that was consistently, it felt like you had that dominant piece there. To me, I've got two dominant pieces in Edmonds and Edwards. And I think the smartest of the three of them might be Sanborn, because he just makes the I know where they're going to be. I know how they're going to run this. I know exactly the position I need to be in to make this tackle. Boom, he's there. And I love that about Jack Sanborn.
He's got great instincts, and he's just he's a physical player. You know, just watching him against Detroit take out two, you know, and make a play in the backfield really cleaned it up for a lot of defense, because guys were out of their gaps. One of the other things that I really love about Jack Sanborn is when he hits people, they go down. They don't go down. They don't fall forward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just an understanding of when I hit you, I need you to either go back or go down right there.
Yeah.
You know? So you know that dog, that violence is oozing through him.
How do you develop? Because I think, to me, he's got the best instincts to know when I need to shoot to the backfield. When I need, like, when he shoots to the backfield, he's getting a running back.
Absolutely.
How does he develop that? How do you gain that? Because I feel like that was something that you were very good at as well, and it was almost an unspoken language where it's like, I know what we got here. I'm going to get the back.
Yeah. Well, you know, number one, you got to believe in your keys. If you're a linebacker, you got to trust your keys, you know, and your keys will take you to where you got to go for the ball. You got to be a downhill guy. you know, some guys aren't downhill guys. Some guys play in a 3-4 and their first step is going to be laterally. You know, if you play in a single gap 4-3 defense, then you're going to, your first step should be moving forward. You know, we want to attack. You know, if it becomes pass, you plant that foot and you find out and you go to where your exit point's going to be. But I assume that he's been in that type of that style of defense for a long time. So he's in familiar territory when he reads his keys and his keys tell him, boom, it's run. I'm downhill and I'm gone.
Yeah, he looks like a monster. The linebacker core as a whole looks like monsters. And the DB room is continuing to flourish. Love what we're seeing from Tyreek Stevenson. I think that he's an amazing pick. Find a way to pay Jalen Johnson. He looks really good. And the part that's crazy about it is every now and then you just hear Terrell Smith with the big breakup. It's like, oh, wait, he's good too. Kyler Gordon underneath. Oh, wait, we're building a defense that does get me excited. If we can keep the offense moving in the right direction and not have them getting D minuses from the professor. Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like that we're heading towards a team that can be something, but I guess here's the final question, because now I think this was probably the game that a lot of people were looking at where if the offense overcame this, we know we have something real here. Offensively, do you believe that we have something that is legitimate here, and what do we need to add to it?
Yeah, of course we do. Of course we have something that's legitimate. You know, they've shown that. They've shown that they can be legitimate. You know, it starts up front. You know, if we want to continue to, or we want offense that's going to be special,
yeah,
then we have to address our biggest needs. Our biggest needs are up front. You know, we need to have an offensive line that where the value of the offensive line is in the tops in the NFL.
Yeah.
We can't expect to be a good offense and our line as far as pay wise is ranked toward the bottom, the middle of the pack, the bottom of the NFL, and expect us to be successful. When you look across that line, you have to say, oh shoot, either we have a bunch of high paid free agents, we have a bunch of first round draft picks across that line, or a combination of the two. Okay, then we can say, all right, why are we not producing? Then you can say, why are we not producing? I don't know, man, some of this stuff's not making any sense.
Yeah.
But in the breakdown of playing against a Cleveland Browns team that has a lot of talent, okay, that has a lot of talent, and one of the issues that we had is in protection. The week before against Detroit, one of the issues we had was in protection. You know, we have to get that stuff shored up, but we don't. You can't shore that up with the non-elite talent. You got to be you got to get the elite guys.
I think the big turning point with this defense or offensive line, I should say, was Tevin Jenkins, of course, getting. I think he got his bell rung pretty much because somebody was trying to talk to him on the sidelines, and he was like, "Hey, yo, I'm Batman." I was like, okay, somebody, can we get him to the blue tent, please? Like, quickly check him out.
On the sideline doing a couple of your claps. This right here. I said, why are you clapping? He said, I'm giving him a standing ovation.
I just looked at the one dude holding him. And I swear, as he was walking him back, he said, he don't know where he at.
Yeah.
So I think he got rung up a little bit, right? He got his bell rung a little bit. He was going up against Myles Garrett on that play, just ran into him. Yeah, I mean, tough time. It happens, unfortunately, in this sport. And I think the concerning part was the immediate fall off of the line the second Evan was gone. And that speaks to the point that you made, right, of you need to have – you need to have those guys in there solidified. That's a special situation, but – your entire the second he was gone, the left side of the line just fell over, right? And I like Braxton Jones. I don't love Braxton Jones. I think that Braxton can play. I think there's still things that he needs to develop at. Yeah. I feel the same way, though, about the guy that we paid $10 million to on the right side.
Yeah.
Nate Davis in pass pro, I like him, but I'm not going to sit here and act like there's not times where he doesn't absolutely look like a turnstile on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning. We just paid him $30 million over three.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so again, you know, we I think the consistency of our offense is going to depend on number one, health, and number two, getting the elite guys to protect, you know, to be up front and to stop the Myles Garretts, you know, the Zadariuses, you know, on the other sides and those big guys. Then Tevin gets hurt, we can rotate somebody else in that is of high quality.
Yeah.
So, and I think we have an opportunity to do that and to get ourselves to that situation.
You set up really well with this upcoming draft. I think now
free agency. I don't know,
Lance. These free agent offensive linemen have been scaring me, bro. Like, all the dudes that we just knew were going to be great dudes, we can't miss on these guys. They all not good.
Well, number one, you got to do your homework too. We do our due diligence on one of these players, but offensive linemen that have proven in the NFL typically are supposed to be a better shot than getting a draft pick that's unknown in the NFL.
Yeah. Where would you, with where this team is right now, where would you look to see the Bears go? Would you rather see him go with a vet that's proven on the offensive line, or would you rather see him go young, very Darnell Wright-ish on the right side, who had an okay day? It wasn't great for him either.
Yeah. I'm fine with Darnell. You know, fine with him. He's going to be fine. Yes, I would get another piece to that offensive line. Whether there's a, let's see if there's a center that we can get in free agency. T. Higgins, you know, as a wide receiver, you know, if we can get him,
don't get me excited.
That'd be a great addition. And then obviously you trade back in that draft, get some draft capital, some good draft capital. Pick up either Olofoshanu or Joe Alt.
Oh, shout out to you figuring out how to say his last name, because boy, that name be throwing me.
No, listen. We got to do better now. That's our countrymen now. That's our countrymen. We got to be able to pronounce their names as well as we do the other Europeans. Okay, there we go. Thank you, sir. And
but of the two, Alt is a lot easier. Let's be real. Come on.
I mean, you know what I mean? You know, I talked to some of my countrymen the other day, man. They scolded me a little bit, and I said, you know what? I got it down. Y'all have no problems with me pronouncing my countryman's name anymore.
Olofoshanu. All right. I'm gonna throw that in the memory bank. Shout out Lance getting that one right. I'm sticking with Olu, though. Olofoshanu every time.
And then, you know, obviously the next direction is going to be getting that elite three technique.
We pointed out every week that with Lance Briggs on here, the linchpin of this defense isn't here, and this defense looks like this. What is this defense going to look like?
Scary. I'm telling you, scary. Scary good.
I keep saying it. Y'all hear me. The linchpin of this defense, the piece that – or let me ask you this, right, because you talked about Javon glowingly this week. Is it here and it's just taking a while to develop?
Well, I think they're getting better. They're getting better at what they're doing. But no. Listen,
Okay.
Because if any of our current three techniques right now, do they play at a level anywhere near an Aaron Donald in his prime?
No.
Okay. No. Then no. You know what I mean? This Bears city has seen what a prime healthy Tommy Harris looks like. Okay.
I don't think Muzz remember it, bro. Tommy Harris was such a – his name don't get brought up enough, bro.
His career was really shortened by the injury. You know, it was really shortened by the injury, but, you know, it was special to – I watched him in practice every day. And I was like, dang, I thought I played with some good D linemen before. But I'm like, this is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and when the draft came – along, and I knew Aaron Donald was there, and I'm like, listen,
one player away.
Can we please, this resets our defense if we can get this guy. We end up not getting him. We got Kyle Fuller, man. Kyle Fuller was a hell of a football player, but we were one play away, one pick away from getting Aaron Donald.
And wasn't he, he was like, people were talking about him like he's drastically undersized. He's not going to be able to do this at the NFL. Like, because he's only, 6 foot? Aaron Donald 6 foot?
He's probably 6'1".
And I think they giving him the generous, right? Like the generous 6 foot tall. Like he's 6 foot tall. Yeah, you know I mean, like
listen, like
he was moving lines.
I'm looking at the top three techniques in this draft.
Yeah.
And there's a good handful of them, okay, to choose from. The ones I'm looking at are anywhere from 6 feet to 6'2". They're 6'3" tops.
Yeah.
6'3" tops.
You want to be able to get underneath.
You got to be explosive.
Yeah.
You got to be explosive. So, you know, for anybody that's looking at whoever the top three techniques are, and I know the folks in Illinois are looking at the kid from Illinois.
Come all on right. Now.
And he's definitely at the top. He's definitely
got some dog in him now, Lance.
He's definitely one of the top guys. You know what I mean? But the thing about it is there's at least six that I've watched that I'm like, man, all of these guys can wreak some havoc.
Yeah. It's a good year to address the issues the Bears need. And that does make me feel good about, right, whatever direction Ryan Poles goes. And to me, I've said this, whatever you do with the quarterback, whatever you do with the future of this team, in two drafts, Ryan Poles has brought us six, I guess seven, if you think about guys that have kind of filled in their starters, right? Jahtir Carter has had to spot start here and there, and he's looked okay. He's brought you six to seven competent players in two drafts.
Yep.
That tells me that he knows a little bit of what he's doing here.
Yep.
Whatever decision he makes, I'm going to ride with it because I feel like he's actually leading the Bears in the right direction. Defensively, it feels good. Have there been misses? Yeah. Chase Claypool's caught seven balls.
There's always going to be misses. You're not going to hit on everything.
No. But, and I do want to ask you this because J-Mac brought this up to us last night on the post game show on ESPN 1000, and I hadn't thought about it, and maybe I hadn't thought about it because of how good of a weapon Justin Fields can be. Are there enough playmakers here? And I feel like at the start of the season, we were excited about the playmakers that we could have potentially, and as the season has gone on, it feels like the only one that has been a playmaker has been DJ Moore. Cole Kmet at times, but Cole Kmet is kind of a guy that safety blanket. I'm gonna catch it. I'm gonna get my couple extra yards, and then I'm gonna go down. It doesn't like Cole doesn't feel like the big play guy.
No one's consistent. No one's consistent in catching. You know, and that's been evident over especially the last few weeks where people are like they will say, well, where's Mooney? You know, and or on that last. Big throw that Justin Fields had, you know, to Scott. You know, and I'll say this about Scott. You know, he dropped one at the end of the game against the Browns, and then he caught one and turned it into a big play.
Yeah,
you know, which is awesome. It's awesome to see the speed because then you can see why he was drafted. But there has to be more consistency, you know, for these professional guys. So when you talk about weapons. You know, in order to be a weapon, you got to be dependable. All right. Yeah. You just can't be out there and be a receiver and be like, man, I cooked this guy. I was wide open. All right. But you dropped the ball.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about if you don't convert, if you can't convert. So, I don't know. As far as the weapons goes, it's on a potential basis, you know, and potential means nothing if you don't reach it.
To me, I think every GM has their weakness. Right now, it feels like wide receiver might be Ryan Poles. I like Tyler Scott, but it's like you said, right? Like he'll make a big play. I think he's a heck of a route runner when it comes to getting off the line.
Well, Ryan Poles
when the ball gets in your hands, you know what I mean?
Ryan Poles is an ex-O lineman, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think every GM has a weakness. Like, unfortunately for y'all, right, Jerry Angelo's was the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Maybe not enough attention to the left tackle position. Like, I think that they're right. That's okay. Every GM has a weakness. If my GM's one weakness is wide receiver, there's enough of those guys in the NFL, I can pay one to come through. Guess what? We can trade for DJ Moore. I can deal with that.
Right. I got you.
But I mean, he's 1-for-4 on wide receivers right now.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay. Can we get the offensive line right? Can we get the quarterback move, able to stay up in the pocket? That'd be nice. Yeah, I mean, and you know, can we maybe get the play caller right? I'm just saying, Lance. I know the players said they were lackadaisical only in the third. Only in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Hey, man. We appreciate you guys for tuning in and showing love. As always, hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Another week of who's going to be the next quarterback of the Bears coming your way, because you already know that's going to be all over Twitter. I'm still on the Justin Fields bandwagon, but I will say the door was left open in this game with how the offense played in totality. It's not just Justin Fields, but he's going to be the one that shoulders the blame. As always, hit that like button. Go ahead.
No. It's I think the question for everybody to, you know, that wants to move on from Justin is, who's better? But name the quarterback who's better. Okay.
Listen.
You're looking at, you go through the quarterbacks in this draft, all right? And say, who's better? Okay, because most people were talking about Caleb Williams in the beginning of the season. All right, now people want to start throwing Jaden Daniels' name into the mix. They want to throw Drake May into the mix, but you guys, don't throw those names in there if you haven't really done your research on all these quarterbacks.
I'm not gonna say Jaden Daniels is better than Justin Fields.
I've watched Jaden Daniels since he was at ASU.
Yeah.
I've watched him since he was at ASU. I know who he is.
He's not better than Justin Fields.
He's not. And none of these guys are.
But just putting it out there. If I were looking to take a flyer on any of the QBs in this draft, to me, he's the one I'd take him over Caleb. Me personally.
I wouldn't take him. I'm not taking any of them. Sorry.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if I'm evaluating, like, which QB, not even to the Bears, just which QB do I think is going to have the most long-term success? Those 6 foot, what was Caleb Williams, 6'1"?
Right, Caleb Williams is 6 feet.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, 6'1", I'm doing the air quotes for the podcast. This is like, those guys, right, they don't last. They don't really stick around in the NFL very long, right? Like, you got to be able to see over 6'5" offensive linemen when they standing up.
You got 300 pounders that are coming for you.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe we're all wrong, and that's why Ryan Poles the GM. Hopefully, no matter what all our opinions on, he makes the right call. And what I will say is this. Me and Jeff Meller were debating back and forth on the post game show as well about Justin Fields. And the thought process seems to be the general of, if Justin Fields gets a play caller that calls a game for his style of play, then he will become a good player. But that will not happen with the Chicago Bears. And my question to that is why? If you sit there and you look at all of that and you go, yeah, if he gets the right play caller, he's going to be great.
But there's never gonna be play calling that's gonna satisfy everybody. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just the world we live in. You know, it's just not. You know, so for us, it's really about trust the process of Ryan Poles.
Yeah,
all right, trust the process.
It really is.
And honestly, everybody in Chicago can hate your decisions until you start winning. All right, when you start winning, you'll turn everybody into a believer, Poles. So do what you do. And do what you believe is right. And everybody else will be happy with the results when we're winning.
Now, I was very young. I was very young. When Lovey first got very young, right? So I don't remember it as well. And I wasn't listening to sports radio. I was probably like 7 or 8 years old when Lovey got hired. I'm not going to lie to you. Was, not to make you feel old. No. Were the dogs at the door for Lovey in year two? Like, were there a lot of people like... he's building something, or was it like, hey, this ain't what we thought it was? I don't remember.
Well, his deal was, you know, the first thing we want to do is beat Green Bay. You know, and we didn't win a lot of games, but we did beat Green Bay that year. You know, and then it was we're gonna win the NFC, you know, and we won that. And he's like, then we'll win the division, win the NFC. So we did all that, you know, in year two. And then, you know, go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. You know, we had a lot of pieces that were in place. Like it was good timing because we had a lot of pieces in place for the defense that he wanted, you know, and he wanted those pieces and stuff. So it was a little different.
So it wasn't as bad because y'all second season, he was, what was his first season? 04?
Yeah, 04. 05, we won the NFC. We had
05, y'all won the NFC? Oh, yeah. So, no, he was good. He was set. Yeah, never mind. Mm-hmm. Never mind. I take it back.
All right, we got to go.
We miss you, love you. We miss you. Yeah. We got to go. Hey, follow us on everything. Hit that like button. Subscribe to the page. Leave that 5-star view. Y'all know what to do. As always, your boy, Path the Designer. Joined by Lance Briggs. Y'all stay safe out of Chicago. Bear down. Peace.